Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Good morning, millennials. Welcome back to the Morning Toast. Happy Tuesday. Hope everyone is having a fabulous, beautiful day. It is like a chilly day here in New York, it's getting me excited for like sweater weather, like chubby girl weather. Like that is where I thrive.
We're falling into fall. I'm actually wearing a sweater today. I just jumped right Cute. In because I saw it was 55 degrees this morning, but I'm still wearing shorts because, you know, I'm confused.
I couldn't have moved out of the shorts phase of the year fast enough. I got a lot of comments about how like still in the like dead of June and July, I was wearing jeans. And it was mostly because I just didn't want to wear shorts and like tan my legs and shave my legs and just like the responsibility that comes with bearing legs.
Yeah.
And as soon as we got back, I was the first to put these jeans back on. You like jean weather, legging weather, Topshop stretchy jeans, oversized sweaters, nothing like people crave, you know, the Christmas season, like they love that. I love the when the summer days like slowly dwindle out and it's fully fall and you can get away with maybe like wearing a windbreaker.
Yeah, I feel that. I also feel like this show is weather agnostic. Like you could be watching any given episode of our show and not know what season it is, and I'm proud of us for that.
Well, yes, I think it's important that before you comment about our outfits, please remember we're in an air-conditioned unit. Like, while yes...
But, like, sometimes it's not cool enough.
No, for sure. But, like, while yes, you could judge our outfits based on the weather outside. You could. Why don't you just trust that we are doing the best things for ourselves?
We're just, like, in a bubble, you know?
Yeah.
And what happens at the Toast, like, has nothing to do with what's going on outside.
This is really, like, a simulation in yeah. here. It's just... It ain't real.
Yeah. So I'm glad that we're just indifferent. We're actually kind of in the same season.
Similar.
Because, like, for me, most, like, this is jeans and a t-shirt weather, but I don't fuck with that. So, for me, it's like I wear long on top, short on bottom, even though I don't know what kind of legs I think I have that I have to be bearing them all the time.
That's so funny because my mantra is literally shorts on top.
Yep.
Long on bottom.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's really the same thing. Would you rather have cold arms or cold legs?
Cold arms.
For sure. Yeah, I don't know why I feel like the world needs to see
my
legs.
No, but you look cute. Don't be embarrassed.
Okay, thanks.
You look great.
I really miss Theo today because yesterday he hopped up on the couch, but right before he did, like, he covered, like, a big chunk of thigh for me.
Oh, yes. Theo being on your couch is actually, you can use him to your advantage if you want to strategically place him to make yourself look cuter or just, like, angle yourself. It's actually a blessing to have him here usually.
It is, but he has a big day today.
Big day, getting his hair cut. He didn't get his hair cut the entire time we were away. His hair is, like, filled with knots in his ears. We got out as many as we could, but I'm really grateful that his groomer's coming today, and he's going to smell so good and be so fresh and so clean. And I actually think Theo probably lost a few pounds while we were away.
That's why it's so exciting, I was going to say. He definitely shedded a few lbs while we were gone
because
he
were, like, hiking
every
day.
Active. And, like, quarantine's been really hard on, like, him specifically. I'm not even joking because he hasn't left his house. And,
yeah.
Like, he's just eating his feelings. And so he definitely lost a few pounds. Like, he was going on hikes every single day.
But his hair grew so much that I don't think you were able to see, like, visually how much weight he lost.
You weren't able to see, like, the svelte curve of his waist.
Right. So the vet says that, like, the proper, like, weight for Theo's breed, I don't know if this is for every dog, is, like, you shouldn't be able to see their ribs, but you should be able to feel them. And honestly, his ribs were getting, like, harder and harder to feel recently. So after his journey, he went to, like, a retreat, like Sonia Morgan. He's feeling and doing a lot better. Thank you guys so much for asking.
So I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see him tomorrow, like, with his new crop.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be hump day, so
perfect
timing. You'll be able to hump someone you love, and that someone you love will be looking good.
I absolutely love to see it. We have a fabulous show for you guys. I actually watched so much TV last night, and everything I feel like is worth discussing. Sometimes I watch stuff and like it's just not. I watched the Paris Hilton documentary, mm-hmm. which was fascinating.
It's on my list it's of good. Things to watch.
I watched the extended cut version because like when I searched it into YouTube, it was like, do you want to watch the extended cut or not?
So of course,
like,
extended.
Right, yeah.
The more the merrier.
I don't know what I saw that wasn't in the original though. I also watched The Social Dilemma. Actually, I watched like 75% of it because towards the end, it was just giving me like such bad anxiety. And I watched Dancing with the Stars.
Great. I watched Love Island, still like nothing to share. And what's frustrating is I'm like six episodes behind, but I can't like, I don't know what anyone else thinks about these people because I won't go on Twitter because right. they're talking about like six episodes ahead. They're talking about people who haven't even come to the island mm-hmm. yet. So I'm just like watching Love Island on an island.
Yeah, that's annoying. But the best part of watching a show like when you're late is like the second you catch up is just like rolling over and like going on Instagram, like following the people on Instagram yep. and you hesitate to do it when you're catching up because you don't want to accidentally spoil anything for yourself. So that moment when you can just like finally go is the best. I'm looking forward to that for you.
Yeah, I've been looking at their Instagrams, but I just like scroll past the first six photos really quickly, like if they're in the house or if they posted their goodbye or farewell, like I didn't see it. And I went to like their post from before the show, which right. is also so interesting. And like everyone on the show is an influencer model, etc. And so
that's how it should be.
It is how it should be. It's weird. You know what is weird? Like some of these, especially the girls, like are really like Instagram girls. Mm-hmm. And then you see them on TV and it's like interesting to see what Instagram girls like look like off of Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, that's like our whole generation, you know,
but it's crazy because they really like are that supremely good looking.
Oh, that's good.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, like sometimes you see people on Instagram and you're like, how is that a person real? Yes. And then you see them in the real world like, oh, no, you're like a stunning person, but you're a real person.
Right, but you're also not like that real. Like what you look like on Instagram is like slightly not what you look like with the filters.
Slightly, but there's no one who's like two different people.
Well, that's what The Social Dilemma was teaching me. It's like, can you imagine being like a 13-year-old right now?
No.
Like, no, actually, because you know when you like put your phone on you and you're about to take a story, like you literally can't even look at your camera unless the filter's on. Like I literally will not look at, if I'm on Instagram stories about to record a story, I literally won't look at my cell phone like until I get to my coconut filter, which is my favorite one. Yulia Kors, she makes the best ones in the best, right? And it's like, can you, and like it's funny like when we talk about it, but can you imagine being like such an impressionable 13-year-old and like having that in your brain, like this, the unrealistic standard of beauty, and then like you're also 13 and like you can't look at yourself without a filter.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like so damaging for sure. But I think sometimes like it swings both ways because on the other hand, like a 13-year-old girl has people, like when we were 13, we were reading magazines where the covers were like completely airbrushed. Mm-hmm. And like these were the only people that we had to look up to. And like we never even saw a real photo of them.
Never. Truly.
But like a 13-year-old girl, like, yes, she does see the Instagram model and she sees herself and she can't look at herself without a filter. And that's problematic. But she also has girls like Emma Chamberlain who are like going on Instagram or YouTube without makeup and just being themselves. And like,
well, so.
And that's, so it goes both ways, but it yes. is extremely damaging.
Well, that's what the documentary said. They had all these like Silicon Valley, former Silicon Valley people who were like really there for the start of like Google, and they were engineers at Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest. And they were, and they said in the beginning, they're like, we knew that all the technology we were creating could do so much good. We had no idea it was going to be doing as much bad as it ended up doing. And yeah. Like, that's what it is. It's like, of course, it's honestly like, think about any piece of media or like anything. It's like our Facebook groups. Like
we started out thinking it'll just
so be so much good connecting people around the world. Literally turned into a clusterfuck dumpster fire of shit. Like, and that really is like tech.
I agree. And I also think, as much as I'm trying to look on the bright side, I think when you weigh all the pros and cons, like which way does the scale tip? I personally think it's more negative than positive. Of course. Because, no, but you could also make the argument technology, yes, it brought on a dumpster fire of a Facebook group, but it also saves lives. Like, you know, people are doing, like you always see those Microsoft commercials with what they're doing with technology.
Totally.
Like, and that is in the positive column.
I mean, I think, like, if you needed to be persuaded as to whether social media has done more good than bad, literally, like, I think the most interesting thing I learned from The Social Dilemma is that, like, after 2010, self-inflicted harm, like hospital check-ins and suicide attempt heart check-ins from girls like age 12 to 16, literally quadrupled. Maybe it's like 180% up.
Whoa.
So it's like, how can you even? Okay. And like the whole movie was giving me anxiety. And then it was like, you want to check your phone? I'm like, yeah, I do want to check my phone. And I'm like on my phone while I'm watching TV. And they were like talking about it. So I like couldn't check my phone. I didn't want to like let them win, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just like aware now, but
I'm going to watch that. That sounds really interesting.
It was very dense. But here, also one last, I guess I'm not recapping it in the TV recap, but I just wanted to talk about it. The most interesting thing that I thought, and like, it's not like a revolutionary thing, I just like had never thought of it before. Facebook and like all these programs, they are free to use, right? So you think that you're a customer of Facebook, right?
Sure, yeah.
But you're not, because you don't pay. Essentially, the advertisers
are the customers.
Are the customers, and we are the product because we're being sold to advertisers.
Shook.
And did you know there's only two industries where the customers are called the users? And it's drugs and social media.
Oh my God. Drugs, yeah, shit tech. Like that is crazy.
Yeah, because it's like we're addicted to drugs. We're addicted to tech.
It makes you think we are addicted to tech.
I mean, like the movie was like very...
Do they talk about privacy? Have you been seeing those Apple commercials, the new Apple commercials that are like, they're now selling that they're like best for privacy. So it's like people like in random places in the city, just like sharing really personal things about themselves that they like looked up on their phone. They're like, you know, I ordered 4 pregnancy tests and prenatal vitamins. It's like some things you don't want to share with everyone.
Right.
So now they're like, it's funny how in order to buy a phone now, like the most enticing thing is like how secure it is.
Yeah, I guess.
It was an interesting commercial.
It was a good documentary. I think you would enjoy it.
Okay.
Check it out.
Okay.
And you guys would enjoy it too.
Sweet. Maybe we'll like all talk about it sometime this week.
Exciting.
So exciting. Okay. Let's get into the stories because there's some things to discuss.
Yes, there is.
There are some things to discuss.
I have like a pit about one of the stories.
It's the story.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I honestly I don't want to talk about it, but like we have to.
It's the story.
Yeah.
So without further ado, here are the Fast 5 stories that you need to know before you wake up and take a bite out of your morning toast.
And that's true. But just speaking of this on the subject of mental health, and we've been speaking about it a lot, today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating with a therapist in under 48 hours. It is not a crisis line. It is a self-help professional counseling done securely online. They have a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available to you in many areas. BetterHelp is something we spoke about last week and the week before. It's a fabulous product. I feel like in quarantine times and just in this life climate we're currently living in, it's just not normal. And honestly, I've spoken with a lot of people who feel as though their mental health is not being taken care of, and it is the number one priority. So if you can't leave your house right now, or you don't want to leave your house right now, or you're just having trouble finding someone to talk to, BetterHelp can help you out, all from the comfort of your own home. It's a service available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if you needed. When I started therapy, a lot of people told me that like sometimes the first one doesn't hit, and it's very normal to like shop for therapists. So the fact that they let you change it up for free is fabulous. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. They want you to start thriving and living a happier life today. You can read all their fabulous reviews on their website. If you visit betterhelp.com/toast, that's better, HELP.com/toast, and join the over a million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. So many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. So the special offer for the Morning Toast to get 10% off your first month of BetterHelp is betterhelp.com/toast. Thank you, BetterHelp, for sponsoring.
Yes. Okay. First story of the day, biggest story, is Jerry Harris from Cheer, the Netflix documentary, is under FBI investigation for allegedly soliciting sex from minors. The FBI is investigating allegations that celebrity cheerleader Jerry Harris solicited sexually explicit photos and sex from minors, multiple sources told USA Today. Agents executed a search warrant Monday afternoon at a home in Naperville, Illinois, as part of that investigation. Quote, the FBI is conducting court-authorized law enforcement activity in the area, Siobhan Johnson, FBI special agent and public affairs officer, told USA Today. She declined further comment. Harris, who gained national prominence when he was featured in Netflix's Cheer docuseries, Hayes has not been criminally charged, and he did not respond to a request for comment. The criminal investigation is based on allegations brought by 14-year-old twin brothers. In interviews with USA Today, the boys described a pattern of harassment, both online at cheer competitions, that started when they were 13 and Harris was 19. They said it continued for more than a year. Those allegations were also reported to police by Varsity Brands, a private company that dominates the cheerleading industry, handling everything from uniform sales to major competitions. Harris is accused of asking one of the brothers to have sex with him in 2019 at two varsity cheerleading competitions. In August, one letter to police in Florida and Texas, Varsity's chief legal officer, Burton Brillhart, said the company had learned of inappropriate sexual conduct allegations against Harris and was reporting the information to authorities as required by the law.
I mean, this is such a crazy story. Like, when I read the headline Olivia sent it to me, like, my jaw hit the floor.
This is so surprising. I mean, he hasn't been criminally charged yet, so we'll see what happens. But the FBI doesn't just, you know,
no,
get involved on a whim.
No, not at all. And it's a really, really big deal. It's just, like, crazy.
But you know what? I was actually reading in Toast After Dark, there was a thread about it, and there were a lot of people who have been in the cheer world, and they said, unfortunately, like, this is a problem in the cheer world, like, at within squads and just in the community.
Interesting.
And they weren't surprised to hear about it.
Oh.
Considering, like, the right. culture of cheerleading, which is just, like, underscores this point that I feel like we have to make more and more often on the show, which is that we need to be protecting our young people.
And, like, we need to be creating safe spaces for
and
them.
And why is it that, like, these safe spaces for them, which I would think cheerleading, these extracurricular activities, we gymnastics. Know in gymnastics, like, that these are actually the most unsafe places for young people.
And that is just, like, the hypocrisy of the world. Like, the fact that we carve out these, like, sports are supposed to keep kids out of trouble, keep them safe, keep them healthy. And the fact that, like, these predators just, like, inundate these types of environments is why the world is so fucked up.
So fucked up. And, like, there's just this undercurrent of this, like, criminal activity against children that happens in the world. And yes, we talk about it and it's condemned, but it's, like, I feel like our, like, in this time in the world, in our generation, like, thinks they're so, like, morally correct about everything. Mm-hmm. Yet we, like, can't correct this. And no one really has even taken the time to, like, address it on a large scale, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea that, like, the cheerleading community had this issue, and maybe if I had known that, I wouldn't have been, like, so ambushed by the story.
Well, I was ambushed by it, and then I read more, and I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, it's just
not that makes it okay.
No, it just goes to show you that, like, you literally don't know anyone. And, like, I mean, Jerry was, like, a breakout star. I mean, all the kids were, but Jerry was really, like, a fan favorite for his positivity. He had been through so much in his life, and now, unfortunately, it's gonna be a no for me, Jerry.
Yeah, this is really bad, like, really upsetting.
Yeah.
And we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, I feel like the FBI has some loose ends that I need them to tie up for me. Like, whatever happened with Jake Paul?
I was thinking about that, too.
Like, that was the biggest news ever. He was, like, apparently the biggest drug dealer in L.A.
That's what happened?
No, that's what, like, the rumors were, like, underground Twitter.
It's crazy that we never even, like, at least with Jerry, it's not like we just got pictures of the FBI leaving his house, like, and being like, what's going on? With Jake Paul, we never really got what they went in for.
No, we know they found weapons.
That makes me feel like it's part of, like, a much bigger sting.
Yeah. Maybe we'll find out in, like, a few years in a Netflix documentary.
Yeah, called Cheer. Okay, we'll keep you posted on that story, but that was just, like, the most shocking.
The most, like, weird. Like, what?
Yeah.
The most confusing, shocking, surprising.
Yeah. Okay, next story. Some insider tea, maybe or maybe not true, but, like, I just like theorizing about what happened with Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Okay.
Khloe Kardashian and Scott Disick wanted to continue Keeping Up for an easy payday. Members of the Kardashian family were divided over whether to end the family's iconic reality show, Page Six is Told. Sources say that there were two camps, with Kim, Kanye, Kendall, and Kylie on one side, and Khloe and Scott on the other.
What about all the other ones? Chris?
I think she goes with the flow.
Yeah.
Some of them needed the money more than others, said an insider. This article is, like, a little shady. Like,
who's
saying,
it from?
Page Six. Like, saying that Khloe and Scott's businesses are, like, small peanuts compared to Kylie and Kim and Kanye.
But not, that isn't a fair assessment.
Not untrue. But this is what I thought was interesting. The source echoed their report from last week, which said that the family would likely have continued with the show were it not for the harsh financial realities of cable TV during the global financial crisis. If it wasn't for the pandemic, it could have kept going, said an insider. But times are changing and budgets are lower and people want to move on. So it's like crazy to think that maybe Corona ended the Kardashian.
That is crazy to think. I feel like it,
iteration.
I feel like it definitely could have had something to do with it. While certain businesses like direct-to-consumer brands have thrived during quarantine, like I feel like Skims is probably doing really well, Kylie Cosmetics is probably doing really well, I don't know how good like Nordstrom retailers are doing, and I don't know how good Good American's doing. I feel like Talentless actually might be a brand that would have thrived
for sure, and their shirts sort of went viral, those please wash your hands shirts.
Yeah, and it's just like cute. I mean, it's way too expensive, but it's cute loungewear, so like I don't know why Scott would need the money, but it does make sense. These two separate camps of people who would continue doing it for, and really what I consider to be an unfair payday, and those who wouldn't.
Yeah, it does make sense. But I also feel like for them, it was like, this is an easy payday. They have the formula. They have like the way that it goes, and whatever they do next, it's going to have to be bigger and better and a little different. You know, so I mean, it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
I actually have a hard time believing that Kim was on the side of not wanting to do it, because even though it's probably not their most lucrative venture, it's always kind of been this like staple of their brand, and they're like a marvel. Like, how did these, you know, women get so successful? And it's been like this very specific formula over the years, and that show was an integral part of their success, and I think Kim always like honored that and respected that. And even though it, like I said, it might not have been like their biggest moneymaker, I think that, I don't know, I have a hard time believing Kim. Like, I understand why Kylie and Kendall wouldn't want to do it. They weren't raised on it. They're really not even a part of it right now. They're so busy. But I don't know. I don't see Kim being totally against renewing it unless, like, everyone was on board.
Yeah. No, I could see that too. But I also think, like, she knows that there's much bigger
money out there.
Money. So yeah. Just makes you think.
It's just, I just can't believe we're living in a world.
Like a post-Keeping Up world.
Yeah, I mean, it's not post because we still get two more seasons, but like now that we know.
Cat's out of the bag.
Honestly, like of all the shit 2020 has thrown at us, and every time like something crazy happens, people are like, 2020. I honestly thought like this was the craziest. I couldn't believe it.
It makes so much sense to me. Like, I just, now that, obviously I didn't expect it to happen, but once it happened, I was like, oh yeah, duh, of course.
Yeah, yes, but I just never thought we would get to a place.
Yeah.
I kind of always thought that it was so cool that they had gotten from season one to season 20, like literally become the biggest, most famous stars in the world. Yeah. And they always did this show. And I was just like, I love them.
Yeah. I don't know. Times are a-changing. Also, I do think that like this pandemic has like hit E the hardest.
No, I also think this pandemic has like changed people forever. And I feel like whereas maybe, like the article said, like before coronavirus, like from an emotional standpoint, they never would have let go of the show. But now it's like, things are just different.
Yeah, things are just different. It's a different world. We know
what's important, and maybe money's just important to them.
Yeah, I think that it is.
In Paris Hilton documentary, I really learned that money is really important to her. Like, she literally like does so many things that make her unhappy only because they give her money. And like, she had a goal of making $100 million and she did it. And now her goal is $1 billion. And she's like, I literally will not get married and have kids until I make $1 billion.
Oh my God. Is she close?
She didn't like give us like details. I was like, how close are we? We're like halfway there. I was just curious. And she didn't divulge that information, but Kim was in the documentary for like a second.
Okay. I'm going to watch that today. That's going to be my activity today. I'm very excited. Okay. Next up, speaking of money, this one's just all about cash money.
What?
Leah McSweeney, this episode, I mean.
Oh, we just keep talking about money.
Leah McSweeney is being stiffed by Bravo for season two, an insider says. The newest member of Rohoni, Leah McSweeney, may only be a one season wonder if Bravo doesn't cough up more cash, an insider close to the show confirmed to The Post. The breakout star and fan favorite of season 12 is being offered a, quote, pathetically low pay raise to appear on the next season of the reality franchise, and will have to say sayonara to the series if she isn't offered a more respectable sum, the source said. Bravo and McSweeney have not responded to their request for comment. McSweeney, along with most other first-time housewives, made about $3,000 per episode.
Damn, that's so low.
Which totaled in $60,000 for the season, TMZ reports. The housewife believes Bravo is attempting to similarly lowball her with the season 13 offer, the source confirmed.
Probably like $5,000 an episode.
Sure.
I mean, the fact that Bravo pays like first-time housewives and just like thereafter, like, that amount of money is crazy. I don't think it's a slight against Leah in any way. At the end of the day, yes, she was a total fan favorite, shook up the cast, but she still only has one season under her belt, and, like, that's how it works. So I don't think she's getting a particularly low deal for her. I just think this is how Bravo structures their pay.
Yes.
And while that may be problematic, I think it would be a huge mistake for Leah to walk away, because as much as Housewives of New York needs Leah, Leah needs Housewives of New York.
And I don't think she's going to walk away, but I do think she's in a position to get much more money. This is kind of reminding me of, like, sports. Mm-hmm. And, like, her first season was top notch, like Tom Brady.
Right.
And Tom Brady deserves more money. Well, and you know what? Like, maybe this pay is good enough for Cindy Barshaw, but, like, different strokes for different housewives.
See,
and, like, Bravo has made that distinction. Denise Richards, $4 million for two seasons. And I'm not saying that Leah is any...
No, not
in
at all.
Any way comparable to Denise Richards, but they pay based on talent and based on
what you
bring.
No, they don't. That's the thing. The difference between sports and Bravo here is that unless you are already a celebrity, like, Leah McSweeney before this was not a famous person. So I can't compare her to Denise. And Denise is amongst a very elite group of housewives who don't need the show financially. They don't need it famous, like, for their career. The difference between sports and housewives is that no matter who you are, like, or how much money you have or how good you were that season, you get a similar pay raise as your coworkers. Like, it's not actually based on talent.
No, but I think that different housewives negotiate different pay.
Of course, but I think, like, the cap that Bravo's allowed to go for, like, a first-time housewife to a second, it's not based on, well, she was amazing this season. And let's say there was another new New York housewife and they both wanted raises. I don't think that Bravo would give Leah one more.
I think that they would.
I don't. I think it has nothing. I think, like, if you're asked back, it has really nothing to do with, like, talent.
No, I think that it does, and I think that it should. And I don't think that there are any rules in place that would stop it, and there's no, like, salary cap. And if they... Because we know that they pay certain people more than they pay other people. And I actually think that at Lisa Vanderpump's height of her...
Mm-hmm, a million.
She's making $1 million a season. She's been on the exact same time as Kyle. Kyle making $1 million a season?
I think probably close.
But it's never been reported that that's the case. And also, Lisa Rinna, like, once alluded to the fact that because Vanderpump was getting paid so much more than them, she should be bringing more to the show. Mm-hmm. That same point wasn't made about Kyle.
Well, maybe people thought that Kyle was bringing to the show because Kyle was the one who, like, literally started the LVP teardown.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that if any housewife deserves a big jump from season one to season two, it's Leah. Like, every single person would tell you that she had the best first season of any housewife really anywhere. And from what we understand and what everyone's suggesting, like, this next season will be
built
around her. And that person deserves a raise.
I don't know. At the end of the day, like, I kind of agree with you, but I also don't agree with you at all. Like, at the end of the day, like, yes, she had a great first season. But she's is now on her second season, and she's still a regular housewife, and they're still OGs. Like, I don't know. I feel like, why is Leah different than any other housewife who's ever gotten renewed for a second season? Dorit. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, not Dorit, but, like, Cindy Barshop.
No, Dorit. Because she was just a new housewife.
Yeah, but, like, Dorit didn't have a great first season. So, like, I honestly think that she took this menial raise and probably was like, thank you for having me back.
I feel like Dorit didn't have a great first season, but really contributed to, like, the ethos and the fights and all that stuff.
But, like, no one was, like, angling for her to come back.
I mean, I'm trying to think of who is... Okay, Erica Jane. Very similar.
Okay, so that's... She had a great first season.
Yeah.
And she came on the same time as Catherine Edwards. And say Catherine Edwards had been asked back for a second season. You think they should have been making the same?
Yeah, they did the same amount of work.
I don't think so.
They did the same amount of work.
I think you get paid based on what you bring to the table. And if the show can, like, live without you, I don't think Rahoni whatsoever can live without Leah right now.
Okay, a different scenario is with Erica Jane. We never heard a story like this.
No.
So, like, she obviously took what they gave her or, like, negotiated herself, like, as good of a deal as she could and recognized that not only, like, it's really not about how much you get paid to be on Housewives. Like, I feel like a lot of the women actually make more money outside of the show than they do from the show, but they couldn't get those outside deals without the deals.
Yeah, but...
Without being on Bravo.
Definitely someone like Leah could be making more money from, like, endorsements outside the show when she's making $60,000 from the show. But, like, Lisa Vanderpump, I think she did, like, Teamy Blends once.
Yeah.
But was making $1 million a season. That's real money.
Yeah, but see, the difference is that, like, Lisa Vanderpump didn't need, Instagram sponsorships. Like,
there's something... I disagree with that.
Well, at the time. I actually think right now, like, her empire... restaurant business like actually might be starting to crumble.
Oh, yes, because it's a difficult time to be in the restaurant business. But I actually mean like before COVID, like there's just something fishy about her.
No, I think her fine. Like she's always been rich. And I feel like we can't compare her to Leah because like we've seen Leah's apartment. Like we know that Leah is not as financially stable as Lisa Vanderpump. And Leah could actually really use the money from the show and then the outside endorsements where it's like Lisa Vanderpump works on the show. She deserves to be paid, like whatever. But she doesn't need like Instagram sponsorships, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I just think that like sports, Housewives should be paid based on talent and based on like how much you bring to the show.
Yeah, but you know what it is? It's like talent in sports can be measured like in touchdowns. You know what I mean? Like there are numbers. I don't know how you
measure. Q scores.
Okay. I don't really know how you measure Housewives quote unquote talent because it's all technically all subjective, whereas like sports is not. How many points did you score? So I feel like it might be like a dangerous precedent. And then you like you already when you create a house.
The
like
dangerous precedent was set with Denise for me. Like $4 million for two seasons for someone who has never even been on the show and who actually does have a legitimate career being famous and so has the most to lose and is probably gonna play it closest to the vest. Like for me, that was when I was like, oh, there's no status quo.
Oh, I disagree. I feel like if anything, it proved that like why she got paid so much. Like she, you have Denise Richards is a household name. At this point in time, and especially before her first season, Leah McSweeney was not a household name. Like it makes so much sense why Leah McSweeney was getting $3,000 an episode and Denise Richards, who literally is one of the most famous people in the world, got $4 million for two seasons. Like it just makes sense.
That does make sense. But I think when it comes down to it, it's like what the show would be without this person, you know, and like, I just think Leah brought like made this season of New York
100%.
Now she will like the next season of New York is going to be like so much about her. She's instrumental to the future of the franchise. Yeah. I think she deserves more money.
By the way, I think she deserves more money too. And I am almost 100% sure like this was a very strategical tactic by her team planting this article saying
that we would talk about it, putting
pressure on Bravo. Like it's all strategic and she deserves a raise 100%. But I just think like to come out with like, I don't know what she's asking for, but like, I hope she doesn't overplay her hand. Like, yes, you're very well liked. And everyone loves
this.
You.
I agree with
everyone
this.
Everyone loves you. You're very well liked. You brought a lot to the table. But at the end of the day, you're a second season housewife on a very lowbrow franchise. Like, recognize that. That's what all I'm saying.
I agree.
Don't throw it all away and don't overplay your hand.
But also know your value. Know your worth.
Yes, 100%. She definitely deserves a raise.
Okay. So she deserves more than the pathetically, quote, low raise.
Well, I don't know. What do they consider pathetically low? But let's say she went from $3,000 an episode to $5,000 an episode.
Which actually... Yes. Sounds like a lot. But
it sounds like almost a double. Yeah. Sure. But fine. I think Leah McSweeney should be making somewhere between $7,000 to $10,000 an episode. I do. And I don't think that's an unreasonable request to ask Bravo. I don't know if that's what she's asking for or if she's asking for like $20,000 an episode. You like technically, yes, know your value, but also know how corporate works. Like you don't go from $3,000 an episode to 50. You go from like 3 to 10 maybe.
I don't know if you became the CEO. True. And like, what was Dorinda making? Just give her her paycheck.
That's true. I wonder if they're going to replace Dorinda.
You should be able to make the amount that the person you pumped off made.
Yes.
Because if they should treat it like sports with a salary cap. Like, okay, we have $5 million a season mm-hmm. for Roni. And that would force the women to like perform.
Yes. Oh my God, wait. We need every franchise to have a GM. Jackie just made me watch a draft day. So like, this is what I know about.
Yes, I love draft day.
So we should have literally every housewife franchise.
It all comes back to draft day. You're seeing.
100%. Have a GM, a salary cap. So they have X amount of money to give. And then it like instills a sort of
competition.
Right. And not only that, it's like you don't just show up and get paid. Like you earn what you're worth.
And like how did you perform last season? That might affect your next season. Like I don't think anyone should get like a pay cut, but without just being demoted or fired. But I think that it might affect your raise if like, hey, you didn't really bring that much to this season.
Yeah.
Though there's only four Real Housewives of New York, so they all brought 25%.
No, it's insane how few housewives there are. I do think they have to replace. There's a lot of rumors that this woman, Rachel something, is going to be...
The Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods' ex-mistress.
Yes.
Is going to be on it.
But then she was on Juicy Scoop.
Yeah.
And I think she said that they had wanted her in the past, but I don't think there's any truth to the rumors that she's going to be on now.
So she just seems like someone who literally places herself in Page Six, like had literally one Skype call with Rahoni 5 years ago and like literally can't get over it. That's the vibe that I'm getting. Like she's constantly being like, why is everyone asking me this when like she's the one who called Page Six? That's just the vibe that I'm getting. I don't think anyone realistically thinks that she's going to be on it. And I looked at her Instagram and like she just doesn't look like she lives a luxurious life.
Yeah, that's a big problem for you.
Yeah, no, it's the only thing that matters to me. Yeah. Like to me, it's like if you are super wealthy and like bring a level of class, elegance, planes, cars to a show, that's valuable. That's really, really valuable to me. Like Sutton.
Like Sutton. I think Sutton's the perfect example.
Thank you for your plane.
Because like the thing that's most interesting about her, and this isn't to like bash her at all, like her wealth is so interesting.
And her standard of living. And like when Lisa Rinna like got on the airplane to New York and was like freaking out about being on a private plane, and Sutton was like, it's a flight to New York. Like, what's the big deal? Like, that is what we need.
Yeah, or like when Sutton like couldn't go with the ladies to Rome. For some reason, she was just like, oh, so we'll get a plane.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's the level of like thinking and the level of planning that I live for in a housewife. And I know I focus so much on money when it comes to housewives, but to me, it's so important. And I feel like what started out as an aspirational show for wealthy women has really kind of turned in certain franchises to foreclosures, rental apartments. Like, there's nothing wrong with those things, but it's just not what I want to see on my aspirational TV show.
Yes, I agree.
So I'm and sorry if I talk about it so much, but I think it's so important to the quality, keeping the integrity of the brand. I really do.
And what it started out as. Like, also, Real Housewives of Orange County, like, was supposed to be called Behind the Gates. Like, there is an implied level of wealth.
And half of them don't even live in gated communities.
And, like, the price tags at the bottom of the show. Like, that's not interesting when it's like, oh, Kyle went shopping at Fendi and spent $200.
Yeah, no, but she spent
$5,000. $10,000. Right. Yeah. Oh, also, just a side note. Denise Richards is leaving Beverly Hills, and it turns out that that she's not getting paid enough to stay, and that's why she's leaving.
Right. So, I mean,
that's word on the street.
I feel like Denise probably did ask for an insanely unreasonable raise because that's what she thinks she needs to stay around this time. Like, she had a terrible season. She's like, all right, I'll stay. Give me $10 million. Like, and I thought she was going to leave even before I found out it was a money thing. And so I'm sure she tried to say, yeah, maybe I would potentially do it if you literally triple my salary.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I guess she doesn't need this, but I mean, $4 million for two seasons, like, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, no, honestly, I keep thinking about it in the framework of sports, and it's really interesting, and we never get, like, answers on Housewives. Like, did they quit? Did they get fired? What happened with the money? What did he want? What did he get? Whereas, like, everything with sports is public. Like, got a $60 million contract, got fired, got traded. And I wish they would kind of emulate that because it adds another level of being a fan. It's like, Ben not only watches football, but he watches the draft, and he's like, oh, they got traded. You know, like, it adds, like, such a fun element. And I actually think, like, if Housewives were structured like that, where every player was, like, an agent, free agent, two contracts, like, it would be so interesting.
Yes, because also, like, there is a similarity between, like, what Housewives are for fans of Housewives to what sports are mm-hmm. for sports fans.
Yeah.
You know, like, this, like, competitive, you know, we need, like, a fantasy league draft day situation.
Yeah.
It all comes back to draft day.
Always.
Okay, next story.
And you know what? Anything can happen on draft day.
That's the thing about draft day. Anything can happen. You think something's going to happen, but it could be anything.
Yeah.
A little morning show news or sure. hosting news, sorry. Drew Barrymore's new show is premiering on Monday, and she says the rule book is on fire.
So I saw some people, I haven't seen much, but I did see some people on Twitter like tearing it up.
Well, it hasn't even premiered yet, but I also did see a clip from it.
So I saw a clip. Confusing. She brought out Lucy Liu and Cameron Diaz.
Absolutely love to see it. In tune with what's necessary.
Majorly.
But in August 2019, Drew Barrymore shot an audition tape for a Hope for talk show in front of a live studio audience. 13 months and one pandemic later, the Drew Barrymore show premieres Monday with Barrymore taking center stage in her studio and interacting with a virtual audience. Oh, I thought she sits behind a desk that says Drew's News. So I thought the name of the show was going to be Drew's News. And I thought that was really cute.
It's the Drew Barrymore show.
Drew Barrymore show.
I don't know. This is interesting. I feel like celebrity talk shows are a really funny and like fickle thing, and it's so hard to get it right, and people who you think are gonna like become stars, Kris Jenner, Bethany, like don't work out, and those that you maybe have underestimated, Kelly Clarkson, shine. So I don't know. I mean, when I heard it, I'm like, this is a good idea. She has a great name, the Drew Barrymore Show. Like, it sounds good, but you just never know. I don't know what contributes to like a great celebrity talk show, and you can't predict whose is going to rise and whose is going to fall. So I wish her the best. I just don't know.
I wish her the best. I actually think, yes, there is this untangible factor that contributes to a successful celebrity talk show. I don't know what it is, and I think that perhaps Drew Barrymore like could have that factor, But I think this is maybe like the worst time to have be launching a talk show.
Yeah, cable is not at its best.
Cable's not at its best. Like, people aren't really watching TV, and the TV that they're watching, like, when it's, you know, virtual filming or at home or like a virtual studio audience, like, it's weird.
There is this fucking truck outside that keeps backing up. Me, 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 me. And, like, honestly, I'm having phantom sounds. I'm going to hear it in my sleep. And, like, I literally just want to go outside and literally drive the truck, like, to Jersey. Yeah. Sorry. What were you saying? There is this intangible thing. Yes. I don't know. It's a balance of, like, charisma, uniqueness.
Relatability.
Yes.
I don't know. And then there's just X, you know?
Yeah. It's a medley of things.
And by the way, Tyra is a success. It was on for so many seasons. Huge. But at a certain point, like, shows just end. And so it's not like, it's not Chris. It's not Bethany.
No, I would consider Tyra a success.
Oh, right. You said Chris and Bethany, right?
I said Chris and Bethany. Like, Meredith Vieira. Like, you would think that would be a hit. She was, like, on people's, she was in people's homes on the Today Show or whatever, whichever one she was on. And it seemed like a very natural progression. And, like, to me, when that failed, I'm like, that's a shock.
There is a huge difference, though, between reading from a teleprompter and, like, being in a living room setting, making people feel like you're in their home.
It's also a strange balance to be a famous person, but have to give the floor to famous people. Like, most of being a talk show host is actually not talking, it's listening. So it's listening to celebrities and, like, blowing smoke up their ass. Whereas, like, you're used to people doing that to you.
Yeah.
And you're the biggest star, where it's like, you actually have to take a step back when you become a talk show host and give the floor to someone else.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people, maybe even like Kris Jenner, can't do that because they are the star of their own lives. And I feel like it actually takes a very humble person to be a good celebrity talk show host, because you have to realize immediately that it's not about you.
Yeah. And I feel like Drew Barrymore is a good listener.
Yes.
I don't know, like, where I would get that information. It's just a vibe I get.
I agree. And I think Kelly Clarkson has proved, you know, time after time to be an excellent listener.
Yeah. Like, whatever she's doing over there, it's just electric. It's so crazy. I mean, I knew it, like, literally 4 years ago when someone was like, who's your dream guest on the show? And I was like, Kelly Clarkson. It's because she is just hosting material.
It also, like, if you would have told me 2 years ago that, like, in 2020, like, we're gonna have a brand new Kelly Clarkson, like, new show, new life, like, new man, she looks so good. Like, if you had told me we were literally gonna get a brand new Kelly Clarkson, like, Kelly 2.0, I never would have believed you.
I would have. We get a new Kelly every 4 years. Think about it.
It's like a president.
Think about it. It's also, it's really like her albums. Like, each album is so different from the last, and then she puts out a new album. She's like, this is finally the album that, like, is on me.
Yeah.
Nope, like, record label telling you what to do. I'm like, I thought that was piece by piece.
Yeah.
Nope, it's this one, Love So Soft.
Well, LA Times did a huge piece on her. I don't know if you saw it, just about, like, the new Kelly, basically what we're saying. And she did reveal that she's working on her latest album and is her most personal work yet.
So they're all, but, like, I truly believe, like, it's not like Miley where it's like, this is me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, every 4 years, she's a new person and we're getting the most personal work yet.
I actually think, like, her most personal work ever was Piece by Piece.
But that's not what she considers the most personal work.
That's,
like,
crazy.
She's still, like, and I feel like because of the way that she came up in the industry, like, she always just thinks that, like, she has something to prove. Like,
yeah.
Because she had, like, really bad, like, record label drama back in the day with, like, Behind These Hazel Eyes. And, like, even though obviously that's such a successful song and time in her career, like, she doesn't look back on it fondly, I think. And so she's always, I feel like she's just always looking at her past, like, through a negative lens.
Honestly, we need a Kelly Clarkson documentary.
We do.
I feel like she's very interesting.
I know. And, like, she just posted the other day because it's the anniversary of her winning American Idol. And it's like, that's the craziest thing.
Right. All
but you
of
know
this.
What, but you know what it also tells you? Like, as much as it's like, wow, American Idol did this. No. The cream always rises.
100%. There have been so many stars from American Idol, and some of them have literally gone on to be Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, like Grammy Award winner.
Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson. And some of them were just not. David Archuleta.
Yeah, some of them were not creamy. Not everyone can be a Daughtry.
No, not everyone can be a Catherine McPhee.
No. Oh, my God. Success.
I love her.
Okay. Fifth and final story that will segue into our TV recap. The family of Carol Baskin's missing ex-husband airs an ad during Dancing with the Stars.
Okay. So, actually, I watched Dancing with the Stars live with commercials.
Because you didn't want to miss.
Because I wanted to see the commercial, and I never saw it. So, I think it might have been like a regional commercial or like some TV providers. Like, you don't get the same commercials. No. If I'm watching on Spectrum in New York and someone in LA is watching on like Optimum, like, we are not getting the same commercials.
No, you're not. And like, so even in New York, sometimes you're not getting the same commercials. It is crazy. Also, her ex-husband was a millionaire.
Yeah, like, that's why she was able to... She built this like huge cat sanctuary in her like backyard in Florida because she was like a wealthy widow.
Oh, got it. Okay, I'm learning something new every day.
Yeah, so basically the family of her ex-husband, who was the one she allegedly was involved in
murdering, Don Lewis.
Don Lewis. They put together an ad to play during right before her dance, which basically just said like, our dad is missing. The $100,000 to anyone who has tips on whatever. Like, we're just trying to bring our dad home.
That is, it was so like crazy.
Really sad. At the end of the day, it's like, we're so caught up in like this documentary and the memes and Tiger King, Carol Baskin killed her husband. But you also forget that like this family lost their dad and like their ex-husband. Like, it's really sad.
And this woman potentially lost her husband.
Yeah. Sure, Carol Baskin lost her husband.
Okay, well, I do think that that is so interesting and, like, really a great use of ad space for this family, mm-hmm. considering what could potentially be the situation.
And I'm sure they're just, like, done with, like, the glorification of who they think is a really bad person.
Totally.
So I love them for getting in and, like, maybe ruining her night a little bit.
Did you hear from them in the documentary?
Yes.
And they believe that Carol Baskin killed her husband, whacked him.
Yeah, and they give a play-by-play of, like...
Can't convince them it didn't happen.
Literally, they give a play-by-play of, like, the day that it happened, how, like, she was so shady, like, locked herself in his office. Like, there was just, like, so much going on. But talking about Dancing with the Stars, I really do want to talk about it because it was an interesting episode. Two major things happened before I talk about the contestants, just, like, with the structure of the show. The first was that Len, who is the... Judge, the oldest one, is like stuck in London. I think with coronavirus, he's like a little too old to travel. So Derek Huff filled in for him. And honestly, it was such a breath of fresh air. Like, he gave such specific critiques. He was like, oh, well, I think like your pot de bourrée was like, you know what I mean? Like,
pot de bourrée.
He didn't actually say pot de bourrée, but like, it was just very specific critiques, not like your energy was low or like your arms weren't point. Like, there was just like real feedback and it was kind of refreshing. And he was such a big fan of so many people that, like, before he even started, he was like, oh, man, I loved you in, you know? And, like, it's nice when he acknowledges the stardom. So I thought that was actually a good thing. And I think that him and Julianne should probably at some point be transitioned to full-time judges because, like, this cast of losers that they have, like, is so losery sometimes.
The other one is...
We have Carrie Ann and Abba.
Yeah.
Who, like, I just can't. And Bruno, who I also just can't.
Got it.
So okay. I think that... I like the idea of pros, successful pros turning into judges.
I like that too.
So then the second major shakeup was Tyra Banks. And I was really, really excited because like Tyra Banks has never put anything out that like I didn't just absolutely love. Like, I just love her. And I wanted to give her grace because, you know, going from a show that had two iconic hosts, like people loved them, they didn't get fired or anything. Like, it was just time for a change. They didn't do anything wrong. They went out on top to then take on the job by yourself and have really big shoes to fill is really hard. And she was really, really nervous. And then on top, given the fact that you have no studio audience and they're playing a laugh track that's like not timing with your jokes, is tough.
That's rough.
So I want to say that there was like a very weird energy in the ballroom last night, like an awkwardness. Tyra was like very rushed, very nervous, flubbed her words a lot on the teleprompter. We have to give her...
Was it live?
Yes. We have... I mean, there's so much there are all those pre-recorded packages. Right. But the scoring, the dancing, and the hosting were live.
Okay.
And we have to give her a little bit of grace because, like I said, it's a huge...
Transition.
But she does have to get it together because it was really bad. But, like, I love her and I want it so badly to work. And I don't want the fans to, like, regret or, like, I don't want people to be like, we should have kept Aaron and Tom, you know? Because, like, she can do it. I know she can.
Yeah, yeah.
And she hosted this, like we were just talking about, majorly successful talk show. She can do it, but she was really nervous.
Okay. I mean, it's a big shoes to fill. I understand being nervous. It's, like, crazy to me. Like, I feel like Tyra is so much bigger and more prestigious than Dancing with the Stars. But, like, even Tyra gets nervous.
Well, she also was the America's Got Talent host recently and, like, really did a good job. But I don't think that show is majority live. So, like, live is hard.
Live is hard.
Now I want to go through the dancers and tell you what I thought of everyone. Because AJ McLean is so cute and I just like love him and he was very good. I mean, he has experience like dancing like boy band dance, but he kept up and the thing is like everyone was really good and there wasn't like a major like loser. Like sometimes there's just someone who like has two left feet or is like too Just can't get it. Now, the closest we got to someone who was the major sink was Chrishell Staus from...
You're lying.
I know. It was really, really shocking. She was on the bottom of the leaderboard, stunk it up. Like, she was just really not good.
Like, she just doesn't have rhythm?
She just doesn't have rhythm, and she doesn't have it.
Okay.
But see, speaking of someone who might have it, very shockingly, was Anne Heche. She was excellent. Like, she was funny, and I'm like, who is this woman? I had no idea who she was.
But she's so familiar. Like, she's from stuff.
She's from stuff, and then she named all the things she was from, and I had never heard of any of it. But she had this great energy, and she was funny. Like, she was really being, like, a character, and then she danced excellently. She reminds me of Kate Flannery from The Office last season, who, like, was this, like, random woman, a little bit older, and then just, like, killed it. And I think she's going to be really, really good. Speaking of stinkers as well, Kara Baskin, like, I couldn't actually watch a dancing because, like, there was, like, so much going on in my head. But what I did watch, like, it was atrocious. Like, she won't get out for a while because they were teasing the whole time. Like, Carole Baskin, like, she was, like, the Taylor Swift. Like, yeah. It was crazy. How she's the most famous person there. But she was an atrocious, like, an actually horrendous dancer.
I mean, what did you expect?
Charles Oakley was such a cutie. Also, like, athletes just don't perform well most of the time. It's really hard. They are so coordinated, like, in their field. But when it comes to dance, like, it just doesn't click for them. So Charles Oakley wasn't an amazing dancer. But Vernon Davis was an amazing dancer. And I think he might be single. And I think him and his partner, like, are in love. Like, I was getting that vibe, okay?
Yeah.
Also, to someone who really, really shocked me, Jeannie Mai from The Real. She came out and she was like, I'm not going to embarrass myself. And, like, I'm going to kill it. And she really did. And she just was, like, she's so pretty. And watching her package and then watching her dance, like, I just had respect for her. You know what I mean? Like, I think, like, she didn't want to embarrass herself. And she, like, put in a lot of time and effort. And it was good.
Okay.
And, like, maybe you wouldn't have looked at her before. But, like, she really made a name for herself in the first round.
Wow.
Now, speaking of someone I have respect for, Jeannie Mai, let's talk to someone who I have literally no respect for, Jessi Metcalf. I don't know why I came to this realization when I was watching last night. I'm like, I have no respect for you. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact that, like, you're a cheater. Like, you literally publicly cheated on your fiance of 5 years, or, like, you threw away a perfectly good career. Like, and I don't know what you did wrong, but, like, you just ruined it.
Yeah.
You went from Desperate Housewives to literally a movie that defined a generation. John Tucker Must Die, to literally being a has-been.
To obscurity.
In a matter of years. Like, it was crazy. So I don't know where my lack of respect for him comes. And then just, like, seeing him on the show, I was just, like, I was, like, mad watching him. I'm like, no, you don't get to be here. Like, it was just, whatever. He was a fine dancer. And honestly, I don't even remember watching him because he was, like, he said Desperate Housewives was so big for him that it launched this amazing movie career, like, implying that there was more than one movie, when you and I both know very well that there wasn't.
No, there was not. But you know what? I'm going to look up his IMDb because now I'm curious.
Yeah, no, wait.
I'm curious how he can even say such a thing.
Yeah, no, John Tucker Must Die, like, I have to give it to him, was huge.
Oh, he's also, like, a Hallmark king.
Okay, so, like I said.
Yeah.
It was just one, right? Okay. What was after John Tucker Must Die?
He's on Chesapeake Shores, which is a big Hallmark show.
So, like, okay, it can be something that's not Hallmark, please.
Okay. Something that you would have heard of. I'm looking. I really am. Mm.
So, like I said, no respect for Jessi Metcalf and the throwing away of a perfectly good career.
Yeah. No, for real. Like, there's nothing. Maybe these are big, like, action movies or something, but nothing that we have watched.
I feel like where he went wrong is, like, it's so random. I feel like maybe he, like, pissed someone off and got, like, blackballed. Like, that's the vibe that I'm getting. Right?
Maybe he, like, cheated on someone important.
Right. Okay, Johnny Weir was fine. Like, honestly, when you're a figure skater, like, you have an unfair advantage. And he was, like, funny and sassy. And, like, obviously everyone loves him. I want to talk about Justina Machado. You might not have heard of her.
Yes, I know who she is.
She is, like, she's, like, a soap actress. She's, like, a big ABC star. But she also was in Desperate Housewives. And I couldn't put my finger on why she looked so familiar until I looked her up. She was on Desperate Housewives. Remember when Gabby's stepdad, spoiler alert, gets murdered by everyone in the living room?
Yeah.
She is the stepdad's wife and comes looking for him. She's like, Alejandro was just here.
Yeah.
So
she's also on Queen of the South. Like, she's a pretty big character, and I'm all caught up on it. And she's fabulous.
She was amazing. Like, I didn't know her, and I just left, like, literally her biggest fan. She had this energy, and she brought her Latin flair, and, like, I was just literally living for her. She's not my number one favorite.
Wow.
Caitlin Bristow. It was honestly, like, emotional to watch.
I was watching Jason Tardik filmed her watching herself, and I was emotional.
So she got paired with Artem, who was supposed to be her partner 5 years ago. So it's just, like, this big full circle moment. And all this justice has been served. And for those who don't know, because a lot of people were like, why'd you write justice on your Instagram? Caitlin, after she was The Bachelorette, was the first, actually, like, one of the first Bachelor people to be offered Dancing with the Stars, and she was, like, ready, literally.
No, the point is that she wasn't. Like, Sean Lowe had done it, Chris Soules had done it, and all these men had done it.
Right.
And then Caitlyn was slated to do it, and she is a professional dancer, and it was, like, duh.
And Mike Fleiss, who is the producer of The Bachelor, like, said he didn't want, you know, people trying to get famous from his show, and forced ABC to fire her, essentially.
That's so crazy that she literally, like, had the job and had a partner.
And by the way, what's most important is that before she was on The Bachelorette, she was a dancer.
Yes. Did they mention, like, Mike Fleiss in her package?
No.
So what did she say happened?
She didn't address that she was supposed to be on the show.
Oh, in her package?
No. But she did on, like, Instagram.
That's the most interesting
part.
But
they have to protect ABC, like, whatever.
But Mike Fleiss, does he even still work on The Bachelor?
I believe he does.
Doesn't he have all those, like, charges against him that we reported a while back?
Between
against
his wife? Yeah. So, obviously, just cancel culture, like, skipped over Mike Fleiss and Carol Baskin and all these other people.
Who've committed crimes.
Yeah, right. Caitlin Bristow was obviously excellent. Like, she was, she's a dancer. She looked great. Like, she was happy. Like, she's going to go far, 100%.
Yeah.
Someone who's also going to go far is Monica Aldama. From Cheer. Now, it was a little weird given the Cheer news that came out yesterday, but it's like those who can't do coach, you know, those who can't, but she can do. And she was excellent. She was at the top of the leaderboard, got like one of the highest scores. She's just like a lovely woman and like someone I just really like and respect. And she got respect and she was at the end, which means like she was important and she was great, like really, really good.
Is that everyone?
No, there's four more people. Sorry.
Oh, shit.
Three more people. Nelly is an absolute P-Jom. Like, I love him. He was great. He danced to his own song. If you want to go and take a ride with me. But he did, like, a salsa, and he was, like, it was very confusing and weird. He did a great job. And I just, like, loved him. And something about him, he was giving me, like, cute boy vibes. Like, I just, like, had a crush on him. Speaking of cute boy, but someone I definitely did not have a crush on was Neve Schulman. He is literally the biggest nerd of all time. He was good. His partner literally called him a nerd. He was being, like, so nerdy. Like, literally, he could not stop smiling. Like, and he was wearing a tuxedo, so he just, like, felt like a nerd.
Yeah.
Again, not someone I, like, love or care about, but will do well. Then the final person I want to talk about is Skye Jackson. She's probably going to win.
Really?
Yeah. Like, she was just giving it all. She's the youngest. She has the most energy. She's tiny.
Yeah.
He could flip her around. She was splitting in. It was only the first one, and she was at the top of the leaderboard, and she is someone I might not have, you know, picked out as winner because she's so young, but she is definitely a force to be reckoned with on the DWTS stage.
So she was number one on the leaderboard?
She was up there. I don't remember who was number one towards the end, but it was her and Caitlyn was up there. And I don't know, they rushed the end because Tyra Banks was taking so long to wrap up.
Interesting. So it was enjoyable to watch. Like, you'll continue watching the season.
So now that you asked, I don't know, the 2 hours, it literally felt like an eternity.
No, like this, just the recap felt like an eternity.
I know. So I honestly don't know if I'm going to make it the whole season. I just wanted to see everyone. Like,
yeah, that's exciting. And you know what? I appreciate, like last season, I enjoy watching it through your recaps.
Yeah. I also already recapped The Social Dilemma, but the Paris Hilton documentary, I want you to watch it so I won't spoil too much, but all I have to say is I absolutely love celebrity documentaries. Like, I, first of all, beyond whatever they're selling or trying to tell me, I love seeing how they live, how they travel, like the logistics of being a celebrity, what the houses are like, how much staff they have. And Paris was, of course, gave us everything we needed and more with, she actually moved houses in the middle of the documentary. So it's like she went from this like sickening house to like this more mature adult house. And you go from closet A to closet B and just like seeing what it takes for her to pack and like all this stuff.
Oh my God, that gives me anxiety.
Yeah, it was anxiety ridden. And also how she has insomnia. And she's just like up all night, like, and she's traveled to Seoul and like, she just like, she's just a very interesting girl, not only like from the business side, but this documentary, the whole point was for her to get away from this character that she's built. Dumb blonde, simple life, Walmart, you know, like all that stuff. And let everyone know, like, she's actually been in on Secret for quite some time. But she was so good at playing that character. Like, nobody believes that she's anything but that person. And it's, like, trapped her in this life where it's, like, she's actually, and they had Nikki on it. And actually someone who's spent time with Paris and Nikki myself, I actually can attest to the fact that, like, Paris is nothing like that character. And everyone who meets her is like, she's the smartest woman in the world. But like, when celebrities say that, you just like don't listen.
Yeah.
But she's the most normal, like down to earth, like girl you would go to college with. Like, she's just like so fun and funny, and she's very successful, but she's like stuck in this like hamster wheel almost. But the best part of the documentary was she got to play Tomorrowland, which like, for that's like when I play the Beacon Theater, like it's like the biggest deal for a DJ. And she was dating this guy, and they had met at Ultra, and they had like been hanging out like over the course of the documentary, and he came with her to Tomorrowland and like got wasted, and she was like not drinking. She was doing press and getting ready for her set, and she was on her laptop mixing stuff, because people think that she doesn't do her own mixing, because one picture went viral of some sound engineer turning up this volume and literally was like, look, this guy Paris has a DJing for her. So she takes herself very, very seriously, and like, this is such a big day and it's such a big deal, and this guy's getting wasted, like complaining that he's not hanging out with her, and like literally just like slobbering all over her, like, kiss me. And Paris is like, fuck off. And she literally kicks him out of Tomorrowland, rips his bracelets off, and security is like pulling him out. It was the most interesting thing. He was literally like ruining the most important day of her life. Like, she's walking to stage and he's literally like globbing onto her, being like, Paris, hang out. He was German, like, hang out with me. And literally she was like, get the fuck off me. Like, it was crazy. Like, I couldn't believe that they not only got that on film, but they kept it in the documentary. It was fascinating.
Okay, I need to go home. I need to go watch.
It's such a good documentary. I really recommend it. And I just love Paris so much. And Kim was on there being like, she literally said, like, I wouldn't be like who I am if it wasn't for Paris. Like, Paris, she didn't have to teach me anything. I literally just watched her and learned everything. It was crazy.
It's so crazy. Okay, I gotta go.
Do you have anything you want to recap?
No, still nothing really major to say about Love Island. I don't know why I'm still watching. But, you know, it's like KMN. Like, I just love mindless shit.
Me too. We actually haven't done a KMN in a while, but maybe there'll be something mindless that shows up on your newsfeed this week.
Maybe. I hope so.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the Morning Chose Millennial Morning Show, where we post videos on YouTube Monday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. So if you're... No, sorry. Thank you guys so much for watching the Morning Toast, the Millennial Morning Show, where we deliver the fast 5 stories that you need to know before you wake up and take a bite out of your morning toast every Monday through Friday on YouTube. So if you're watching us on YouTube, please feel free to subscribe and give this video a thumbs up. We are also available as a podcast anywhere podcasts can be found. So that's Apple, iTunes, Spotify, all the places. So wherever you listen to podcasts, find us, the Morning Toast, and leave a 5-star review about how beautiful, stunning, and smart we are. We love you guys very much, and we'll see you tomorrow for Hump Day.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.